Hey, all you nostalgic honey traps.
Welcome to 90210 Here We Go, the podcast that takes a look at each episode of the Beverly Hills 90210 franchise from Fox to the CW.
One of us is a 90210 expert and the other is a 90210 novice.
I'm Eric Mickles, and I'm seeing these episodes for the first time, or sometimes, not at all.
That's right. I'm Nick Gunning, and I've seen them all, and folks, you're listening to one of our epic April Fool's Day host swaps.
Not Eric Schmidt. I'm from 90s music, got me, like, I'm not from this.
No, it's crazy. And I just did that 90s music episode on Return of the Mac, and I told the story about us jamming to Return of the Mac while playing ancient pinball games in Maryland.
Yeah. You got on two episodes. I got kicked off previously on X-Men and 90s music.
That's true. That's a good point. Well, I got kicked off about Heavy Tried. I got kicked off about Heavy Tried. So we've all, some things happened to all of us. But anyway, go on. You were about to say Kendra's Lions.
I was. Our show is brought to you by the Radio Meanwhile Network. Make sure to check out other April Fool's Day host swaps with Kendra on This Endorian Life. Where you made her read a Ewoks comic book.
Yeah, technically Steve made her read it because I wasn't even on that episode. So
Nick on 90s Music Got Me Like, where he talks Return of the Mac. Hillary on But Have You Tried? And Nick and Allie on Previously on X-Men, where you watched the X-Men episode of the 90s Spider-Man cartoon.
Correct. That's what we did. Allie never saw the X-Men cartoon, never saw the Spider-Man cartoon, wasn't alive when they were airing, so we had a good chat.
Yeah. So you can follow all these shows on Radio Meanwhile on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Please rate, subscribe, and share this show wherever you get your podcast. And please don't give this show a bad rating just because I'm on it. Kendra will be back.
It's a one-time thing.
Let me be honest with people here. The only experience I have with this show is listening to this podcast.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll see an episode because Kendra's watching it, and I do have to ask, who is that? And she'll be like, that's Kelly.
Yeah.
So I only
sometimes you're on the show though. You did That's I think true. Our season 2 finale you did with us and then all
I
the
have
music
watched
episodes
an episode or two. But for the most part my experience with 90210 is hearing Nick and Kendra explain to me what happened on the show.
Yeah, so. You're a real man of the people. It's just like we pulled someone off the street and stuck them on, but that's great because the premise still works because I still know it and you don't know it.
And
so
I'm a super novice.
It's fine. Anyway, today we're discussing the 1988 Michael Keaton film Clean and Sober. Eric, take us away.
No, all just right.
That's another April Fool's. That's another
Michael
April Fool's.
Keaton, hot off the heels of Batman Returns. Well, do you want to say what we're actually discussing?
Yeah. Oh, sure. That's a good note. Good note, Eric. Today we're discussing Beverly Hills 90210 Season 8, Episode 11, Deadline.
All right. Who do you think has the deadline in this episode?
Huh. That is a good question, because it's not like Brandon's article has a deadline. Did they give him a deadline, like you have to tell us by this point?
It seems like the episode should be called, like, Results.
Right. Yeah. It's all over now.
Well, let's check out the Beverly Beat.
We guarantee the Beverly Beat is the best advertising you'll ever get.
This episode originally aired November 19th, 1997.
Okay.
All right. And Nick, you explained that there's a two-week gap between episodes.
That's right. After this episode, we had a skip week, and then the next one didn't come back until early December. So you've got plenty of time to fill us in.
Well, between those times, specifically November 19th, 1997, Meg Ryan turns 36.
Okay.
Jodie Foster turns 35. And Adam Driver turns 14.
Oh, that blows my mind. Jodie Foster is younger than Meg Ryan?
Yeah. By a year.
No, I know, but I guess I just...
But, yes.
I don't know.
Meg Ryan definitely seemed older in Joe versus the Volcano than Jodie Foster did at that time.
I guess. Yeah, it's weird.
Foster's also a little lady.
I guess Meg Ryan is just perpetually like 27 in my mind, and Jodie Foster's like, you know, however old Jodie Foster
fact,
is now.
I'm now older than both of them from 1997.
Hey, congratulations. So,
Adam Driver is also a little baby, born in 82.
Okay.
Wait, are you the same age as Adam Driver?
I was born in 83.
Ah, oh, Adam Driver's older than you. You'll always have that.
We could have been friends. I was hanging out with, the ninth graders around this time, so sure.
Big event birthday for humanity in 1997. The McAfee septuplets were born to Bobby and Kenny McAfee in Des Moines, Iowa. This was the first set of septuplets to survive infancy.
That's a lot. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot of babies at once.
Yeah.
Yowzer.
There was the Simpsons episode where Apu and his wife have 8 kids at once. And I wonder if that was... I would imagine that's playing off of this.
Yeah, yeah. I bet.
Off of the media and everything. I feel like I do remember seeing stuff about this as a kid. In 1997, I would have been like 11. So, but I would still like read the newspaper.
Oh.
Not like I was checking the stocks, but sometimes they had articles in the middle for kids at my like local paper.
And
so I would catch stuff. On my way to Calvin and Hobbes.
Sure.
And the kids section. Yeah.
Yeah. I was a Garfield man. Garfield, Beetle Bailey, you know.
Speaking of Garfield and speaking of this guy, born on November 19th as well, was James A. Garfield, the 20th U.S. president.
Whoa. Eric and I have some history with James A. Garfield because one time when we were driving through Ohio, we randomly stopped at the James A. Garfield Historical Site and really soaked it in.
Really went through that... The whole house. His whole house.
The whole house. And we got there and they were like, oh, we open in like 40 minutes. So we're like, you know what? We will wait, sir.
Yep.
And we did.
We took a tour with maybe like 2 or 3 other people.
Yeah.
Through the house of James A. Garfield.
It was a fun time. It's in Mentor, Ohio. If you're in the area, I recommend it. It's a good time.
Didn't we have to watch a movie?
There was a movie. There was a brief movie.
There was a movie where he's like,
Garfield.
More beloved than Lincoln.
Yeah.
For what? 3 months? 2 months?
Yeah. Yeah. He wasn't president very long. The funniest part about that tour was we got to like the sitting room and it was like, this is where they entertained Ulysses S. Grant. And we were like, whoa, a president was here?
A real celebrity. We weren't kind of James A. Garfield there.
Well,
it was still the 20th president.
We were dutiful guests.
Yeah, that's true. I had brought a bonsai plant as a gift.
Yeah, that's nice. I had a bunch of cake.
Thanks.
So. Yeah, that was really nice.
Doesn't really track. Movies, let's do it. These are the movies that came out between the November 19th, 1997 and December 3rd, 1997.
Got it.
Starting with Anastasia, starring Meg Ryan.
I went to a few years back, I went to a screening of Say Anything, hosted by John Cusack.
Right.
And yeah, it was super fun. And there was like, you could do, it was a Q&A afterwards, so people lined up.
Always a mistake.
And he was very John Cusack-y about it. But somebody got up and asked him, like, you know, what he thought about, like, Anastasia and how he didn't really get into, like, all the political elements at play. And if he felt... And he was like, you know, I didn't really... I just showed up and I read some lines with Meg Ryan and I had a good time. I really wasn't thinking about, you know, it wasn't just such a... I thought he answered the question well and it was just a silly thing to ask, so...
I saw Anastasia in theaters and enjoyed my time there. Watched it again in college and found myself crying at the end. So I guess I'm a baby.
Whoa. You know, I have never seen this movie.
What?
I've never seen it. But I do really like the Yul Brynner Anastasia movie. If that
Christopher Lloyd is
for
in
anything.
It.
I know. It's a plays, yeah.
Well, he doesn't sing in The Dark of the Night. That is Jim Cummings doing Christopher Lloyd's role there. The music in it is very good. The musical, the Broadway musical, cuts out all the supernatural stuff.
Oh.
And so you don't get In the Dark of the Night. You just get that whole, like, Anastasia has, like, Kirsten Dunst is, like, kid Anastasia. And then Meg Ryan.
Oh, okay.
But then Lacey Chabert, I think, takes over the singing roles.
Confusing.
It has a all lot right. of, like, Kelsey Grammer's in it. It's stacked with this cast.
I mean, I should watch it. My wife loves it. I don't know. I just never have.
I'm pretty sure it is the, oh, man, I can't remember his name. The guy that did all the other movies that aren't Disney that we all love. Anyway.
Like Don Bluth?
Don Bluth. I'm pretty sure it's a Don Bluth film.
Really? Okay.
The Rainmaker, a John Grisham adaptation. Oh, have you seen this one, Nick? I know you're a Grish fan.
You know, I have not read The Rainmaker, and I never have seen the movie either. So
Matt Damon and DeVito?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Okay. Mortal Kombat Annihilation, the sequel to the good Mortal Kombat movie. The sequel
There's a good
so
one. There's a good one.
The 90 Mortal Kombat from the 90s is a fun movie.
All right.
Actually, anyway, Alien Resurrection, the fourth Alien film.
Wow.
Which brought in a cloned Ripley. Still played by Sigourney Weaver. Also included a young Big Eyes, Beetlejuice, can't remember her name.
Winona Ryder?
Yes, thank you. A young Winona Ryder.
Oh. Was she that young in 1997?
I guess.
Wasn't that peak Winona Ryder? Okay.
Yeah, I guess she's not that young. It's all post right. Little Women. Yeah, a lot of people really don't like this movie. It is weird. We talked about it on Three Nice Things.
Ooh.
I don't hate it, but that's because I don't love the Alien franchise.
To this day, I've only seen Prometheus. That's it.
Yeah, you're probably okay. Nick, I imagine you've watched this movie a couple of times as a kid. Flubber.
Yeah, Robin Williams. I did watch Flubber. Yeah.
We rented this. I remember it was one of those other movies where I was like, yeah, it's Robin Williams, but it's also kind of sad.
It is kind of sad, and it's not particularly funny.
Right.
It's like Robin Williams just like disappointing all the people in his life.
Yeah, and like
sometimes bouncing around.
His robot friend is in love with him, but can't be with him because it's just a little floating robot.
And you're thinking of the movie Solo, A Star Wars Story.
No, I'm thinking Flubber. Live action 101 Dalmatians also came out with Glenn Close.
That was a good time.
I also didn't love that movie. This was not a good time for me with kids' movies outside of Anastasia.
I never saw 102 Dalmatians.
The sequel, the classic sequel.
Yeah.
Hugh Laurie is also in this movie.
Yeah, he's one of the. He's Jasper, Daniels? Right? Jasper or Horace.
Yeah.
It's Jeff Daniels and Natasha Richardson, I think.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I remember as a kid not liking the dogs didn't talk and also feeling like the dogs didn't go through nearly as much as in the animated movies.
Yeah. You really want to see those puppies contemplating that they're about to be skinned. You want to see that fear in their eyes.
I wrote a little review about this live-action 101 Dalmatians for my apartment complex's little newsletter.
Oh.
At 11 years
look
old.
At you.
Yeah.
Wow. I'd love to read that if you could send it my way.
Also, Good Will Hunting. Stars Matt Damon from The Rainmaker and Robin Williams from Flubber.
Whoa.
We'll bring it all back.
This is one of those movies that I didn't watch at the time, and I watched it recently, and I was like, I mean, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
This one
doesn't really hit me. Do you like it?
It's good, but I think the big thing was it was written by Damon and Affleck when they were like unknowns. And they won an Oscar from that. I think that was the big deal more so than like it's good. But I mean, this thing was like a cultural phenomenon for a while. And like I still see people referencing the, you know, Will Hunting writing, you know, on the board and be like, how did
Yeah.
Community did a whole episode on that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like one of those. It's like a classic. I just. Yeah.
But. I lived near Boston, so watching that movie also recently was like, oh my gosh, this is what it's like. TV, we've got some endings here. November 23rd, The Incredible Hulk animated series ends after two seasons and 21 episodes. The cast featured Lou Ferrigno reprising his role as the Hulk and Luke Perry as Rick Jones.
Woo!
He was all like,
wish I could say I liked that show. But...
I'll hang in there with you, big guy. You're green and you're angry, but I'm your best friend.
Yep, sideburns just sprouting in the animation. Did you watch this show?
No, we didn't. I never watched The Incredible Hulk as a kid. So
it's funny how, like, you know, X-Men the Animated Series and Spider-Man are like around a similar time, but it's like Iron Man, Fantastic Four with Brian Austin Green, and this Hulk show just like it just never Silver Surfer too. They just never really did anything for anyone. I don't think, you know,
at the time that the shows are on, X-Men and Spider-Man are, you know, putting up huge. I mean, X-Men is the highest selling comic all the time. And Spider-Man is doing that whole clone saga. And it's got Venom and Carnage at the heights. And that show is bringing them in. Whereas the Hulk is very different from the Hulk in the comics at the time, where he's the Professor Hulk and everything.
Yeah.
And Silver Surfer definitely was, you know, faux pas.
They went for it, though. I mean, they did go for it.
Yeah, they sure did. Fantastic Four as well. They all tried to get on heat for comics that were not 90s hot.
Yeah.
Also ended on November 28th, 1997, was Beavis and Butthead. Seven seasons, 200-plus episodes. The original run ends on MTV.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. I know you know this, but I had a great time with the Paramount Plus reboot.
Yep.
Recently.
The Paramount Plus reboot is great. It's very funny. Yep. We also, when you visited me, was it the last time you visited me? We did both the movies?
Yeah. We did both
as
movies.
Beavis and Butthead did America and did the universe. We did the movies.
That's true.
Yeah, the Paramount Plus. It's only two seasons right now, but it's very funny.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
But it ended, the original series ended then. But as the band Life talks about in their song, when one old lady closes her eyes, an angel opens their eyes, and Tenacious D starts on HBO November 28th.
Okay.
I've never watched an episode or the movie.
No, me
neither.
But
I've listened to the music.
Yeah. I we've talked about this before, but there's been lots of times where I hear Tenacious D, and I think, like, oh, I bet I would like that. And then I listen, and I'm like, no, I don't.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't.
There's a few of their songs I have on my iPod, but it's not like I'm not going into a deep dive on Tenacious D because it is pretty crude at times.
Though we watched Kung Fu Panda 4 and it ends with a Tenacious D cover of Hit Me Baby One More Time, and I have listened to that a lot. I will admit that.
Well, I'm glad we're talking about music because on November 25th, 1997, Will Smith debuts his first solo album, Big Willie Style.
Okay.
CD I still have in my CD book in my car.
That's pretty good.
Are you familiar with the songs from this one? This one has Getting Jiggy With It, Miami, Men in Black.
I would know. Jiggy With It, Men in Black, and whatever else I've heard in your car would be the ones that I know.
Miami! Welcome to Miami.
No.
Party in the club when the beat is on all night in the
break of dawn. All right.
Welcome to Miami. That song, that. You turn that up, that bass will rock your windows.
I bet it will.
Also, at this time, Aaron Carter released his first album at the age of 10, which made him the youngest male artist since Michael Jackson.
Really?
Also another tragic figure because he just died a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And had a lot of trouble. So maybe don't turn 10-year-olds into superstars.
Yeah, society. That could be a cautionary tale that we take heed of.
The biggest song in America, number one on the Billboard's Hot 100 at this time, was Candle in the Wind, Something About the Way You Look by Elton John.
Oh, sure.
Because America was still obsessed with the death of Princess Diana.
Well, it hadn't been that long ago at this point.
Well, in the UK, the number one song at the same time was Barbie Girl by Aqua. Mm. So, I don't know.
I guess that is something.
A bit of a... a British mania, I guess. You know, or...
I always thought that, even as a kid, when that Candle of the Wind came on, I thought it was pretty corny. Just to, like, swap out the Marilyn Monroe lyrics and toss in Princess Diana. And they don't even really fit, you know? Like, goodbye Norma Jean, goodbye England's Rose. Like, what? Elton.
Not that they're the same thing at all, but Springsteen did that when he played the halftime at the Super Bowl. There's a song where he's talking about, like, baseball, and he switched it with football, and it was like...
Bruce.
Come on, Bruce.
That's the exact same thing, first of all. Second of all, it's corny.
Yeah. There's another thing that I remember, though, at age of 11. Like, boy, still talking about this.
Still going.
I mean, still even going. Now... Video games released at this time. Tomb Raider 2, the sequel to Tomb Raider 1.
Yes. So I never had a PlayStation. My friend Dan Manson had a PlayStation, so when we do like sleepovers and stuff, I would play so much Tomb Raider at his house because I loved it.
They just remastered, not remade, but remastered the original three Tomb Raiders that you can get on pretty much everything right now, including Switch.
So what do the graphics look like now? Are they not boxy?
The graphics have been updated. I think some of the controls...
To like modern aesthetics or just...
Yeah, modern-ish aesthetics. Not like this was made today, but made to look nicer. And the controls, I think, are given a bit more freedom because that was still using the D-pad on some... So you still had kind of locked controllers. But you also have the option at any time to switch between the graphics. And honestly, looking at some of the screenshots, I'll probably end up playing it with the original graphics because...
Really? That's fun.
It's just when you bring in modern lighting and stuff into video games, you kind of get rid of color choices that they made to replace that. And I find levels lose some of their character in that. Anyway, Diddy Kong Racing on the Nintendo 64.
Okay.
This was Rare had a kind of a habit on the Nintendo 64 where Nintendo would make their thing and then Rare would do that in a way that everybody was like, oh, this is better. So like Mario 64 and they did Banjo-Kazooie. They're like, oh, this is so much better to play. Mario Kart 64, Diddy Kong Racing. and people kind of noticed that. I had Diddy Kong Racing. You could use a hover boat. You could use an airplane. Ooh. You had like missile weapons. It had of an open world area that you would find levels and you'd have boss races. Yeah. It was a fun time.
That's pretty cool.
Also, not worth playing today, but an interesting beginning. The first Grand Theft Auto game came out at this time. Wow. It would take another two entries for it to become part of the zeitgeist.
But yeah.
This was the beginning of that franchise.
Okay.
So, you've never played a Grand Theft Auto game in your life?
No. No, I have not. You know what? I used to love Driver. Driver and like Driver 2.
Yep.
Is that,
no, yeah,
does that count?
Yeah, I think those kind of count.
All right.
But yeah, started as like an, I want to say the first one, bird's eye, like, you know, 2D bird's eye view game.
Okay.
So.
Right. Uh-huh.
All right, Nick, take us beyond the zip code. What's that zip code again, Nick?
I would love to. The zip code is 90210, if you've heard that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that explains a lot of the news you've been doing.
Yeah. And after her time on 90210, Lindsay Price, who we're going to meet this season, we haven't, so Kendra doesn't know who this actress or this character is, but anyway, after she was on 90210, she went on to play Joanna Frankel in the short-lived series Eastwick, which was an adaptation of the John Updike novel, The Witches of Eastwick, which had previously been adapted as the movie with Jack Nicholson, Cher, and Michelle Pfeiffer, which I have not seen, and I love every one of those. Susan Sarandon, yeah.
It's a weird movie. We watched it for Halloween. It is...
Okay.
Very weird, and you have to believe that Jack Nicholson in that movie is attractive in such a way that Cher, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Susan Sarandon will all be trying to compete and love him.
It's an attitude thing.
It is,
I guess.
Cher, Cher has been very vocal that she had to fight for that role because people.
Yeah,
like,
I've heard
no,
that.
You're too old. You're not what we're looking for. She's like, listen, buddy, I'm Cher.
Yeah.
I won an Oscar. Put me in this movie.
She's like, if I could turn back time, I would. Yeah.
Michelle Pfeiffer plays a very like kind of me like something you would see like Meg Ryan play kind of in the future.
Oh, interesting.
But anyway, weird movie.
She had some roles like that, but I would say earlier than 97.
It's
you
like
know,
she's like, playing. She's playing Selina Kyle before she becomes Catwoman in Batman Returns and that. She's got the glasses. She's like, oh.
Hey. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Mr. Nicholson.
Yeah, that's it. Like the movie, have you ever seen Frankie and Johnny with her and Al Pacino?
No.
Okay, well, similar kind of.
All right, adding to list.
For her, yeah.
I'll watch anything where Michelle Pfeiffer wears glasses.
Yeah, yeah. It's that's a good movie. The play is, it's based on a play, and I didn't like the play at all, but the movie's really good.
All right, synopsis for... Deadline. Rather than having Erica testify, the gang comes up with an elaborate sting operation to capture Riggs, with Erica as bait. At the Peach Pit after dark, David accidentally sets the place on fire, jeopardizing his tenacious D lease on the space. Donna and
tenuous.
Noah. Oh, tenuous. I said tenacious.
You
I
did.
Can't read.
That's okay.
Donna and Noah. Get closer, and Val figures out the secrets of Noah's success. Hint, it's money. Finally, Steve and Carly wait in hot anticipation for the paternity test results. Tick tock! Dylan phones it in.
We never see him. Throughout this whole arc, we never see
He's
Dylan.
He's busy following
we never
the Hulk
see Iris.
Across the Southwest Americana.
I guess, yeah. It's just, it's so wild to me that they didn't have either of those characters. And we never even got, like, some BS phone call. Oh, yeah, Dylan, she's right here. Hold on.
Yeah.
The closest we get is Brandon,
hey, Brandon
being like, oh,
I could
talk, to
but me and the Hulk are in Arizona right now. You know how it is. All right, She-Hulk just showed up. Might try to hook up with her. I don't know. All right, tell Brand my love. All right.
You got it. You say you don't know this show, but you got it.
All right, Nick. Well, who is living in Beverly Hills?
Today's episode is directed by John Perret. This is his only time directing the show, but he was a producer on season 7 and 8.
Which this is.
This is season 8, yes. Mm-hmm. Written by Michael Cassett. Mm-hmm. We have a few returning players this time. We have Miles Jeffrey as Zach Reynolds, so that's Carly Hillary Swank's son.
Okay.
We have Fatima Lowe, who is Terry Spar. She's like the other staffer at the Beverly Beat.
Right.
And then we have Jed Allen as Rush Sanders, who is Steve's father.
Right.
Several final appearances, because we're kind of wrapping a few arcs here. We're wrapping the David Lone Shark arc. We're wrapping the Erica as a teen prostitute arc. And so a lot of these characters we're seeing for the last time. And that includes Jonna Stewart Bowden as Erica, Vincent Irizarry as Riggs, Cammy Green as the Peach Pit, Jessica Collins as Jody, Robert Torti as Everett Sands, Kimberly Bailey as D.A. Deborah Mills, Daniel Ziscapa as Detective Pate, Dirk Blocker as Dan the Bartender. Did you recognize him as Hitchcock from Brooklyn Nine-Nine? Because Kendra didn't.
I did not.
When the fire breaks out and right. They're like, oh, it's like Dylan and the Bartender. Yeah, that's Hitchcock. It's a young Hitchcock.
That's funny. I did not recognize him.
Final appearance of Rebecca Balding is Jill Abernathy, who is David's landlord.
Mm-hmm.
We have a new recurring player, and that's George Del Hoyo as Dr. Gary Monahan. He voiced Dr. Fate in Superman the Animated Series and Captain Zane in Batman Beyond. Do you remember that character?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Plus, he played Dr. Morris in the Three's Company spinoff, Three's a Crowd.
Yeah, that's...
Did you ever watch any of Three's a Crowd?
You know, I can't remember if I watched, like, the first episode or not. That was on Nick at Night. I can't remember. Yeah. I do remember this show's final episode, Three's Company's final episode that sets it up with him, like, living there. And Jack's like, now we can have our honeymoon. And the dad walks in and he's like, whoa, and falls off the bed.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Classic. Well, it's funny because those are, you know, these all based on UK shows. And both of the spinoffs were huge hits in the UK. And both The Ropers and Three's a Crowd fizzled out very quickly in the US. So who knows?
Yeah.
We have Don Brunner II as one of the cops. He'd previously played a cop on Melrose Place. So he's on the Aaron cop? Spelling. I like to think that he is the same cop. We have Nancy Linari as Anne. She's Brandon's lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of voice work. So she was on Darkwing Duck, Aladdin the Animated Series. She voiced Morticia in the Addams Family. She voiced Marrow in the X-Men Legends game.
Mm.
Plus, she voiced Aunt May in 2017, this animated series, and both of the PlayStation games, which I just finished.
Oh, the recent Spider-Man games for the PS4. Okay.
Yeah. And seeing her here, they definitely use, like, her like, it's her in the game. Like, the motion capture and everything is definitely her.
Yeah.
So it was kind of, when she popped up and I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, it is Aunt May.
I remember when the first Spider-Man PS4 game came out, the big talk was more, with the motion capture and the looks, was more about the Peter Parker, because it looked like they were trying to do comic, Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, and Tom Holland all in one face. And people were like, what is this?
The upgrade, like the PS5 version upgrade, was like definitely worth it, I think. Like, all the graphics were so much better. It was just a smoother. I just, like, last night finished the final DLC in that Spider-Man game. Yeah. So I am really and truly done with the first Spider-Man game, which makes me sad.
Sorry, man.
So.
Well, the second one's supposed to be pretty good, as is the Miles Morales spinoff that happens between the two of them. They're both supposed to be very good. So.
Yeah, I've heard... My friend Caleb, who did Butt Heavy Tried with us this time for the host with, plays these games. He said Miles Morales is like the bridge between the two. So I got that game geared up and ready to go.
Yeah.
So I'm ready.
Cool.
Then we have Randy Kovitz as Dr. Farr. His first credited appearance was as the officer on the dock in George A. Romero's 1978 film, Dawn of the Dead.
The dock?
Yeah. I don't know. That's what it said on IMDb. I assumed I would say a dock and you would know right who I mean.
Well, yeah, I'm trying to think of Dawn of the Dead. A dock. There's a helipad. There's no, like... okay. That's a great movie.
Yeah, okay. Well, he was in it.
Night of the Living Dead is one of my favorites of all time.
Okay. Plus, he did episodes of The Tick and King of Queens.
Okay. Live action Tick or the animated Tick?
Live action Tick.
Okay, I wonder who he was in. Yeah. The live action Tick was so funny. Both of them.
All right, are you ready to do this?
Take us into the zip code.
Let me ask you, first of all, because I know that you're not up to date on the podcast, so you're not fully aware of the arc. Do you remember Erica? Do you remember Dylan's sister and all the chaos? Yeah.
Dylan had a sister, and it was a big deal. They had to, like, rescue her.
Yes.
With a bounty hunter?
Yes. Well... Jonesy, I think he would take issue with Bounty Hunter, but yes. That's basically it.
It's kind of funny because in that one, Valerie, she had to pretend to be a prostitute?
She did, that was a different Jonesy episode, but she did have to pretend to be a prostitute for Jonesy. Yeah, but the thing that's been driving Kendra and I crazy is that, like, Valerie was the only one connected in this, and they didn't even use Valerie at all.
Yeah.
And the fact that Dylan, like, moved heaven and earth to rescue Erica from this, like, you know...
No Dylan, no Valerie, no Jonesy.
Yeah. It's just
bring in Jonesy at least.
Yes, bring in Jonesy. That would have been a great move too.
Yeah, I helped find her that one time. I don't know.
Yeah. He would have done it.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is weird to have that character.
Normally, Kendra would run us through the episode, so I'm going to do my best.
Yeah, that's good, because even watching this episode, knowing who the actors are, there was a lot of like, oh, who's that character? I didn't feel like I was totally lost with what was going on, but I certainly didn't know who was who for some of these characters.
Fair enough. So David has just had, like, mishap after mishap with a peach pit after
David.
Dark. I know. And so he stole money together. From Donna. He borrowed money from a loan shark. It was a whole thing.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the previous episode, we, the audience, see that Noah's the one who paid off the loan shark, but David doesn't know. So this episode starts with him going to Donna, being like, Donna, oh, after all the horrible things I've done, you've paid off the loan shark. Only Donna's like, it wasn't me, Slim. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
And then she kicks him out, and he's like, you're kicking me out? But the last episode, he packed all his stuff, and she really kicked him out. So I don't know why he's so shocked this time.
He says something like, I told you the truth. And then she asks him a few questions. And she's like, so you didn't tell me the truth. He's like,
He's like, well, you're going to press me on it.
Yeah.
I just got to get this out right at the start. Kelly's new hair is terrible.
They start it with her and Erica coming down the stairs. And Erica's like, so does Brandon like your new haircut? And she says, he loves it. And I wrote Kelly haircut as well, because I don't understand the show. She obviously looks the best with long hair.
Yeah, yeah.
And they've just nonstop given her short hair.
Yeah.
She looks great with long hair.
This is a bet. She looks like SNL era Dana Carvey with that haircut. It's rough.
I'm trying to remember if that haircut was even, you know, cool at the time, but like most people were doing the Friends haircuts, and those were, you know, not nearly as short. So I don't get it.
I think that like real stylized, like messy pixie cut was a popular thing, and like she could pull that off, but that's not what this is. Yeah. This just reeks of bad haircut.
All right.
You know, this reeks of like something happened and they had to do their best. So anyway,
new haircut, new me.
Yeah, we learned that Brandon did talk to Dylan, and Erica's going to go and live with him. She had been living with Dylan's mom.
Yeah, he's like, I just got off the phone. You just got off the phone with Dylan. Yeah. He's doing great.
But it's always a little awkward, because Erica and Iris, Dylan's mother, never actually interacted on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And their only connection was that Jack, Dylan's father, is supposedly Erica's father.
Mm-hmm.
And Iris was married to Jack at one point. So it's like a almost like a stepmom scenario, but not really.
Oh, with Julia Roberts?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Susan Sarandon from Witches of Eastwick.
It's Scarlett Johansson.
Anyway, Erica's like, no, I can't go. Brandon, you're still in trouble. We got to solve this kind of thing. And Brandon's like, it's fine. Knock, knock, knock. The cops are here to arrest him.
That's a pretty funny, just like how much the cops barge in as soon as they open the door. It's like, boom!
Here's the thing that I cannot wrap my mind around, okay?
Go on.
Brandon has interacted with this pimp multiple times. The pimp knows Brandon, knows Kelly, knows that this is all about Erica, right? Brandon writes the article, uses the pimp's name. Everything is out there. So how is he protecting Erica? Because obviously the pimp is going to know that Erica's the one. Like, it just really doesn't make any sense.
Who's show running this?
I know. I think it changes every other week in season 8. Anyway, then we get to the opening credits. Give me your thoughts on the opening credits. What do you think about those?
So as soon as it started, I did kind of, because like when it just in 1997, has to have felt very dated. The music, that da-na-na-na, it all feels very like late 80s, early 90s, in a way that like was not in 1997. We were, you know, that later part of 97 starts to be a lot cleaner and more polished with music and stuff. It just feels so dated. But I guess at that point, you can't change it 8 seasons in.
Yeah, but they could. I mean, a lot of shows at that time, like the later seasons, are a much, like, sometimes they would go jazzier, or sometimes they would just simplify.
What's Boy Meets World's intro song? It changes every season. So
true. But did, as somebody who like existed in the 90s, like, did that mean anything to you? Like, if you would have heard the 90210 theme, like, in the late 90s, you wouldn't recognize
it. I was young and I didn't watch it. My parents were very much like, the old, like, it took a while for them to let me start watching The Simpsons in the 90s. So, like,
I wasn't allowed to watch Simpsons in the 90s.
You know, as soon as, like, 9 o'clock hit on, like, changed the channel for Fox, I was barely allowed to watch Fox at the time. Okay. I didn't really know anyone who did watch 90210. But again, I was 11 in 1997.
Yeah.
But really, until you, man, I don't think I knew anybody who had watched 90210.
Okay. Okay.
So,
I don't even know how...
You were allowed to watch it? Yeah.
Well, yeah, I don't know that at all. But my stepbrother was several years older than me, and he loved the show. And I think that's kind of how I got to be aware of it. Mm-hmm. But it's not like I had friends watching it. Like,
I feel like I saw more about it in its later years, or maybe even the CW years. But I do remember seeing the previews a lot more as I got older. So
Okay.
Also, you know what? Party of Five and Dawson's Creek were more what I remember people talking about. And maybe that's just because they were the newer ones.
Yeah.
So they were getting more press in the thing. Like, for some reason, Disney Adventures was covering those shows.
Yeah.
And not 90210 as much.
Well, I think that, like, Party of Five had more of a rep of, like, this is a strong family drama. And 90210 was like a teen sex romp. You know, so I think it was like...
I mean, it's a late night soap opera.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a primetime soap opera, but...
Yep.
Anyway, the intro.
Yes, so we do the intro, and then we start at the Beverly Beat, and Carly comes in, and Steve is just, like, basically pacing and climbing the walls because he's freaking out about these paternity tests.
Yes, this happens, but the lead into this is a bunch of B-roll with some really bad ska that I assume is the replacement track.
It's gotta be.
The thing is, I enjoy ska, but when it's this bad levels, it's just awful. It is like, the solution is the problem. It's awful.
I glaze right over that because, like, it washes over me now. This rewatch, like, for this podcast is the first time I've ever watched the show with music replacement. And it really hurts it. Like, it really, really hurts it because music was so crucial. And as we talked about, as we talked about on, like, our Peach Pit soundtrack episode and the other music episodes we did, it was so much contemporary music, but it was so much classic music. And it was like, you're watching a scene and you think, like, oh, you know what? Pop song would have been, like, perfect at this point. Well, they played it the first time around.
Yeah.
And when I rewatched it, I watched it on SoapNet and they had all the original music. Right. So I've never seen it this way before. And it's tough.
On Supernatural, I watched the first season of Supernatural. And that show is a very, like, classic rock kind of thing with its music. And it's all replacements in the first season. And I watched, as soon as you get to the second season, I guess the rights had changed because it opens with Bad Moon Rising by Creedence Clearwater.
Yeah.
But the whole time you can totally hear, like, oh, this was supposed to be Creedence Clearwater. This was supposed to be Lynyrd Skynyrd. And it's just, it definitely hurts something where it's like our tone is... They're traveling around America, so we have classic rock on the radio. And when you take that out, it definitely, like, removes whatever artistic intention is there.
Yeah.
A lot of times. But anyway, that was just bad ska. When ska is bad, it's really bad.
Yeah, it was bad. It was noticeably bad. And, you know, the streaming for this show is all over the place because sometimes the music was so integral they can't cut around.
Yeah. But you're right. Steve is in a mood.
I don't know. Kendra and I were talking about this last time, and it's like, I think we're meant to feel sorry for Steve, but, like,
oh,
I just
my word.
Don't.
He's such a jerk.
Like, he is such a jerk. And, like,
he's awful.
We'll get to the resolution, but, like, he really puts her through something and really, like, I don't know, as if she just, like, set out to. And that's another thing that this show has done multiple times. So I guess we'll put a button in that till we get there later.
Made Steve look like the victim and the woman look like the just being mean and awful and, like, how dare you seek paternity tests on somebody who could be the father?
Yeah. And it's not the first time that's happened. And it's not even the first time it's happened to Steve as far as, like, it's actually the woman who was the problem, and, you know?
You can correct me on this, but is it his acting that makes him seem like such a supervillain? or is it just the writing? Because at one point, Carly is trying to, like, help him and stuff. He's like, isn't it supposed to make me feel better? Because it doesn't. And I'm like, is he going to kill her?
I don't know. I don't think it is his acting, because I think he's had really good moments throughout the run. Yeah. And even like in our Sharknado specials, it's like Ian Ziering, you know, he's got something.
He knows what he's doing. Yeah.
The writing here is really sloppy. So
yeah,
he just doesn't have anywhere to work in.
He just seems really, yeah, he just seems like a villain this whole scene, at least.
This whole arc, the way he's treated Jody.
My whole life is over. I'm like, how? Yeah. How is your life over?
Right.
Your
I know.
Life is over. You're going to have to give paternity money. And then, you know, that's it.
I mean, just one of many reasons why looking at this season, you would say poor Hilary Swank. But like the position that they're putting her character in, like, and Kendra made this point last week. It's like, this is a woman who is like devoted to her child and has like made it work. And she's kind of like patting Steve in the back while he's being like, oh, I'll have to be such a loser if I have a child. And it's like,
honestly, I was shocked at the end because I didn't know she had a kid.
Mm.
So I was like shocked at the end, like, wait, she has a kid and we're doing this? And
doesn't that make it a thousand times worse?
It is weird how supportive she is. She's like, hey, man, it's going to be okay. It's and at insane. The end, it seems like she's even more in love with him.
Yeah.
Crazy.
It is crazy. Okay. Well, this is all interrupted by a call that the Beverly Beat gets saying that Brandon has been arrested. So then we jump to the station, and Brandon comes in, and he's like, hey, Steve's dad's Rush is getting me an attorney. Everything will be okay. But Brandon still won't break. He still won't give them anything. So, like, he's kind of stuck there.
It's so dumb, because they're like, okay, well, we'll just use the paper you wrote.
Yeah.
We'll just use this article you wrote.
Right,
And base our entire case off this article you wrote.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not telling you anything else.
I don't know what Erica could provide them that they don't already have. That's one. But number two, she's already compromised because Riggs knows she's the one who talks to Brandon. It doesn't make any sense.
It's one of those things where Brandon, like, in the article, he'll put everybody's names down, and then when they ask him, he's like, well, my sources want to remain anonymous. Well, you put your name in there.
Yeah. Okay, so we jump to the After Dark, and Val and David are just kind of commiserating, you know, because Valerie just had this whole, she was in a love triangle with Noah, who she thought was poor, and this rich guy who she didn't like as much but was rich, and then she kind of lost them both, and, you know, chaos. And we see David messing with the space heater, and it's like, okay, well, we all know where this is going.
Yeah, space heaters, they're dangerous.
They are dangerous. I once melted a shoe on a space heater.
Oh my gosh, there's an awful line in here where she says, are you upset that Donna's sleeping with the enemy? He's like, they're not sleeping together. She's like, well, petting with the enemy? Like, oh my gosh.
Okay, so they're kind of getting down to, like, somebody bailed me out. We got to figure out who. And David's like, oh, I get it. Somebody just paid like $15,000 and you want to know who's got that kind of money. And Valerie's like, hey man, whatever. So she goes to talk to Dan, the bartender.
Remember when they were a couple?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I kind of like them as a couple, but it didn't go anywhere. And we see very obviously that David leaves the heater on with crumpled paper all around it.
You can't leave a heater on.
At the boat.
So whose boat is this? What is this boat?
Kendra and I just solved this mystery last week, because when Noah, they met Noah when they were in Hawaii, and he came back with them, and Donna was like, oh, you can crash on my parents' boat. They're not using it right now. But that's kind of part of why everybody's so upset that he lied about the money. Mm-hmm. So it is Donna's parents' boat, but it's where Noah is living. Mm-hmm. So last time they were kind of hung out together, and it ended in a kiss that was sort of spontaneous and sort of like, oh, okay. So it's a little bit awkward there, and they kind of get down to it. Donna says she's there scouting locations for a potential, like, photo shoot, but Noah's like, come on.
I have never seen anyone look more awkward
with a camera,
just holding a camera. Like, it was like she was like, oh, so the cap comes off. It was, I didn't understand. I'm like, I thought the next line would be him like, are you okay? Do you know how to use a camera? But no one brought it up.
But she drops the film, and they both go to pick it up, and they almost kiss, but they don't.
Yeah.
Kelly and Steve, who now have the same haircut, are walking around outside of the jail, and they're talking about, Steve's like, my whole life is going to change because of Jody and my baby. And Kelly's like, well, my whole life is going to change because Brandon is going to go to prison. And they just kind of roll this back around, and Rush comes in, and he's like, Brandon's bailed out. And here they talk a little bit about some beef that Rush had with Steve and Brandon. And so for the backstory on that, the Beverly Beat was a new little shopper kind of newspaper that Rush owned through like subsidiaries of his company. And he kind of gave it to Steve and was like, I mean, this isn't doing me any good. So if you can make a go of it, fine. And one of the first things they did was write an expose about a sweatshop. And it turned out that Rush owned both the building and part of the company that was running it. And so they kind of printed his name right in there and was like, eh. So that's what they're talking about when they're kind of like, okay, we get over that.
You can't keep Brandon's morals in check. He's going to act.
You cannot.
Every time.
He will act.
From season one to now.
That's for sure.
If he sees an injustice, he's coming gonna at
you full
right
force. Towards it. Yep.
It's why Luke Perry was friends with him, because he's attracted to Hulk-like beings who, you know,
of course, who can't control their anger. So Anne, the lawyer, who is also Aunt May, comes out and says they have a meeting with the DA later. So it's still going. It's still in process here. Back at the After Dark, we have some other pretty terrible music, but I feel like this is what they were really singing. So it must have just been like a made-up song.
Yeah, I couldn't tell because it was bad.
But I think they were, I think that was actually like them.
Okay.
The After Dark looks pretty full, and this has been a struggle. David hasn't been able to get customers, so he thinks he should put around...
Well, that was the same thing with the Peach
Pit. Yeah.
They could never get customers, but it was always
full. Yeah, exactly. David says he thinks he should get more goldfish crackers to put out, because what has happened in a nightclub other than goldfish crackers? You know what I mean?
And that is not music that you're going to have, like, happen in nightclub activities.
No, and it also feels like 4
p.m. Could you imagine... Yeah, I mean, imagine the Roxbury guys over there. Just like, this is lame.
They just leave.
Broke the window again.
So he goes to keep. He goes to get the giant tubs of goldfish crackers, which he keeps in his office where he's been living since Donna kicked him out. Mm-hmm. Heater's still on, and he tosses a T-shirt, and it lands on the heater, and the smoke starts pretty quick. So
yeah, it does.
They see the smoke.
Well, if it's been on like all week, it looks like.
Seems like it. Yeah, I felt like when David opened that door, it would have been like just a waft of heat. But
is it supposed to be November in Beverly
Hills?
I think
so. Yeah.
Okay. Is it even that cold in Beverly Hills in November that he needs a space heater on nonstop?
I don't know if like the heat in the building is off. I'm not sure.
You know what? It's 65 degrees out right now, and I got a sweatshirt on.
That's
so
true.
I'm gonna cut David some slack here.
I kind of thought that we were gonna go for a maybe he's not too careful with the space heater, and oops, it burns down, and maybe that's how he pays off his debts.
Oh, you think he's trying to do some insurance?
I couldn't remember exactly how it went, and given his recent behavior, that would be perfectly fine.
So here's the thing: I thought one of the characters was Kelly for a second.
Oh, in another fire.
And another fire. And I was like, oh no, somebody get Kelly out of the building.
They really throw some stuff at her. Yeah. Not even reference, because I thought that too, but there's not even a reference to that other fire. But
where was the other? That was not a club they owned.
No.
That was just a different.
It wasn't a club even. It was like it was an empty house that Steve had access to, and they were trying to make sort of a pop-up party thing happen. But
now Steve and David can, be like, we started fire, buddies.
Fire guys. All right, so David's trying to, get the fire under control, and it's like, uh-oh, this is kind of just one more thing in his string of, I won't say bad luck, because it's all bad decisions, but it's another thing.
To be fair, the fire really only affects that
room.
Just
the office, yeah.
And not even much. He puts it out, like, it's more that everybody saw the smoke and the fire alarm went off that's going to cause him problems.
Exactly, yeah. So. Yep. Okay, so then we cut to someplace, I don't know, look like a factory or something. Valerie rolls in on Everett Sands, and they are just like, flirt, 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 flirt.
Who is Everett?
Everett is just the loan shark. That's it. That's his,
His
only role.
Because she did say, he's paid off or something.
Yeah,
right.
Yep. So she flirts the answer out of him that Noah was the one who paid it. And she's like, no, you got the wrong name. It can't be him. He's broke. He's a bum. And he's like, man, I don't know, because he's got money. And you could just see Valerie's head just explodes because she could have had it all.
Yeah.
But she didn't.
Yep. And now maybe Donna can have it all.
Maybe she can. But see, Donna's already rich. So that's going to, remind me of that later, because that's kind of a
okay.
At the station, back at the station, Brandon is so obnoxious in this thing with the DA, where he's like quoting regulations and finishing statutes and stuff for her. It's
And she says like, you broke the law. He's like, the letter, but not the spirit. I'm like, well, usually you're arrested for the letter of the law, less so than the spirit.
Yeah.
Court cases don't really go for the people who, you know, I felt that the law was really trying to say this.
I just don't know. Okay, Brandon, again, is like, there's so much danger. Like, if I tell you this, like, Erica's going to be in so much danger, and how will you protect her? And I'm like, from a street-level pimp in Beverly Hills when Erica is moving to the UK tomorrow? Like, I think she'll be okay.
Yeah, and it's crazy where the episode goes that he's okay with it.
I know. I just don't think this guy has the network that Brandon apparently thinks he has, where he's going to send, like, international thugs to Dylan's, like, bodega. And it just doesn't make any
sense. You never know. Maybe this is, like, a Sonny situation from The Godfather.
Oh, maybe.
You know.
Maybe.
Maybe he's connected.
Sure.
And
sure.
Maybe Marlon Brando's going to roll up. He's like, what'd you do to my son?
I hadn't even considered that. Okay, at the Peach Pit, we have a Carly David scene, which you might not know this, but that's unusual. I don't think those characters have ever spoken before. Mm-hmm. They have a nice little scene here. And we learn that the reason why David put out that fire so quickly is that insurance was one of the things he decided not to pay.
Oh,
which
big mistake, David.
I'm pretty sure they would have closed him down just for that. I don't think you could not have insurance on something.
That's crazy.
I mean, I feel like he would go to jail.
Maybe it's a very recent lapse. Maybe it was last week and the paperwork is still in the mail.
Maybe it's something like that. I don't know.
Maybe the paperwork was in the fire.
Yeah. This is the thing. I mean, it's no secret that Hilary Swank is not long for this show. I mean, that's sort of famously known that she gets fired and then wins an Oscar a couple of times. But watching the seasons, it's like Noah and Hilary Swank, they came in at the same time. And like Noah is involved in every single story. Like every character has a touch point with Noah. So he becomes sort of instantly integral. And Carly is just relegated to like girlfriend mom and is just a Steve supporting character. And it's like,
you don't want to be connected to Steve in this if you want a long term arc.
True. It's true.
You want to get in there with Brendan or Donna or something.
Yeah, exactly. I know.
When you're with Steve, you're the flavor of the month.
You are right. So I just feel like they didn't put her in any way. I think that she could have brought something interesting. And what she does instead is just take all of Nat's scenes. Because now every scene that's in the Peach Pit is Carly instead of Nat. And poor Joey Tata. I mean, I guess he's just cashing the checks, you know, sitting on that Batman money. Okay, so Noah.
Wait, what? Joey Tata sitting on Batman money?
Joey Tata was a regular in the old Adam West Batman show. He was showed up as the thug quite a lot. He was in the Batgirl pilot that they did, and
all right.
Yeah. Anywho, Noah sits down and sees David, and David doesn't know yet that Noah's the one who paid, and he still just thinks Noah's moving in on his girl, you know. And Noah's like, "Man, listen, if you tell me you're still together, then that's it." And David's like, "We're still together." And Noah's like, "Is that true?" And he's like, "You didn't ask me what was true." And it just kind of ends poorly.
David leaves it. He says something. He's like, "Hey, man, what about this?" And David just says, "You go to hell."
Yeah.
And walks out. And like, that delivery was so good. It's just,
yeah.
You go to hell.
Yeah. Okay. At the Wyatt Clinic. Okay, so Kelly works for this foundation that apparently is just involved in absolutely everything. And one of those things is this clinic. So she goes in with Erica for, they say an antibiotic. So I don't know. I think the implication is like they're doing sort of like treating her for STDs or something. Mm-hmm. But she sees Dr. Monahan and they learn that, oh, this clinic is so overwrought and there's so many people here and it's going to take a long time. And Kelly's like, interesting. Back at the beat, here we go. Steve again in villain mode sits down with Jody and was like, listen, sweetheart, here's what I'll do for you. All right. I'll give you $1,000 a month. If the baby's mine, we'll call it good. And she's like, thank you. Like, you have to do that anyway. That's the law.
Yeah.
You know,
you're legally required. Yeah.
And he really goes off on her. He's like, how dare you be impregnated?
Well, at the scene before with Hillary Swank, I forgot that he says stuff like, it's her choice, it's not my choice, yeah. I don't have a choice, everything's taken away from me. And you just hear like the, it's just like these tiny violins being played for the character with this rep. It's just so hard to care.
And again, about him. I think Hillary Swank's, I think the Carly character's response to that would be like, shut up, like we're through, go away. And instead she's like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, you poor man.
Don't come by my house.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. So it's not.
What is Steve thinking? Like, is he cooler with like, hey, I could never ever be a biological father. Yeah. They would kill me. Yeah. A stepdad, okay.
Yeah. Exactly. And
totally different.
And Steve's whole relationship with his feelings about his biological father and his biological mother and like his adoption and all that is just like very present. So it's wild. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So she leaves and then Rush comes in and Steve is
right as she's leaving. Like he passes her.
Yeah. Grandpa.
Hello there, young lady.
Rush comes in and Steve's kind of like, Dad, so when you found out that my mother was pregnant, How did you respond? And, you know, he doesn't actually at this point tell him what's up, but the scene continues a little later. Mm-hmm. Right now we go back to the after dark where Donna comes in to see David just for support. And he's like, how did you even know about it? Did Noah tell you? And she tries to dodge it. And finally she's like, okay, yes, Noah told me. But, you know, why don't you come back to the apartment? You can have your old room while you figure things out. And he just really slaps it down. He's not receptive to this at all.
Yep.
On Noah's boat, Noah's wearing a spectacular sweater. It's collared, it's V-neck. There's so many colors, variations of blue. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
It was so much. I couldn't look away.
He saw every style of sweater and said yes.
Yeah, he did. He went to his sweater drawer and just put it on shuffle. Valerie slaps him hard and slaps him multiple times. And she's furious that he lied to her.
No, at one point he says, if you slap me again, I'm going to slap you back.
Yeah.
It's like,
I know. It's
still like, not the right answer, buddy.
Easy, Sean Connery.
Definitely tell her to stop slapping you, but don't.
Maybe don't with a threat. You do this, I don't think you should say, don't say that. I'll drown you in this ocean. And, you know, it comes out, why did you lied to me and what, you know, and he's like, did Brandon tell you? And this makes it worse because so far Brandon's been the only one who knows. And Brandon only found out by accident, but he hasn't told anyone. So now Valerie knows that Brandon also know, and it's a whole thing. Yep. And Valerie's like, well, it sucks to be you because I'm telling everyone.
I'm telling everyone that you have money.
Yeah.
No.
I mean, it has been kind of a thing. Like, the way when they met him in Hawaii, when he's been here, it's a very, like, he's just a simple guy who just works on boats and makes ends meet, you know? And he's not, it's not just like he has money. He's like heir to this great oil fortune, you know? So it's a lot of money.
But it is funny. I don't know. Because he does say, like, I want people to be my friends, not for my money, which is one of those classic, like, charming rich guy just wants to find people who like him for him situation.
Yeah.
But it is funny that he thinks it's like the end of the world because they all live in Beverly Hills.
I know.
Even the poorest of them is doing better than me right now.
Yeah. I think the thing...
David's situation is still like, well, you're still a club owner.
Yeah. I think the thing that makes it problematic is not that he's just like living a normal life and is just not mentioning how much money he has. He's actively pretending to be like destitute. You know, which is weird.
That's a thing.
Yeah. And so Valerie's like, listen, man, Donna's not going to like your lies either. And he's kind of like, that's true. Back at the Wyatt Clinic, Kelly returns to see Dr. Monahan, who takes a moment to be precious with a little kid who has indigestion. So we know he's a good guy.
Which is, it kind of drove me crazy a little bit that he's talking to this kid and doing a checkup. And then he's also having a conversation with a complete stranger.
Right.
HIPAA. Like, there's no... Where's the HIPAA thing?
Yeah. So anyway, he impresses her with his compassion, and Kelly's like, look, I work for the foundation, and it seems like you could use some help. And he's like, I really need somebody to, like, support these people. And she's like, I'm done it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to talk to them. And he says, welcome to hell. So, two scenes that end with hell. Yep. Did you like that one? What's your favorite hell scene?
Go to hell and welcome to hell.
Welcome to hell.
David's You Go to Hell is the best one.
Brian Austin Green is a good actor. I mean, he's...
I don't understand how what we're seeing is supposed to be alluded to as hell at this clinic.
Yeah.
Other than, like, it's going to be busy and it's going to be sad stories. But the way everybody's acting seems like, hey, thanks, pal. Yeah, thanks for helping my kid.
Even the receptionist from earlier was not harried. She was like, the doctor's very dedicated. Like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not like she's chain smoking and screaming.
Yeah.
Back at the beat. Yep. Rush figures out what's up with Steve, and Steve admits, yeah, I'm waiting on the tests. And Rush is like right on Jody's side. He's like, you got to do the right thing, man. Like, you got to get in there. And Steve's like, well, like you did. And he was like, it took me a few weeks, but I came around.
Well, he says, like, the best thing to ever happen to me was being your father.
Aww.
And that's cute. But it's still, when alluding to the whole, like, when you learned about my biological mom being pregnant and stuff, like, all this stuff, like, Steve should be like, wow, this could be a me situation. Yeah. But he doesn't.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't really.
No self-awareness on Steve's part here.
No.
Which I guess can be very Steve in general, but if we're supposed to ever feel bad for Steve, it doesn't happen.
No. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Because it also doesn't cost him anything, you know? Like, if it really was putting something at jeopardy, he could still be contemplating, like, what it's going to mean. But he's not. It's not like he's taking some responsibility for it. It's not like he was like, oh, I should have been more whatever. It's all over the place.
At the least, if he's like, I never want to see this kid or you, he's just writing a check.
Right.
Every month.
I know.
And, like, he has money. His dad has money. So, like, nothing's.
I know.
There's no
stakes. Yeah. Except for the kid.
I mean, obviously, he should. Yes. He should, like, do more than that. But, like, the way Steve, like, with that $1,000, that was, like, I don't know. It's like hush money.
Yeah.
Gosh, Steve.
I know.
I'm getting riled up.
I know. So back at the beach apartment.
Get Brennan on the case.
Yeah, seriously. Noah shows up at Donna's house, and he's got the widest lapel. He's like John Travolta on Saturday Night Fever in this outfit.
Yeah. He was trying to bring it back in 97.
He tried hard.
You know what? This wasn't 97, but we're heading into 98. Yeah. I think we can do it.
He's here to take Donna out. And luckily, she looks like she just got back from prom, so she's all ready. Yeah. And he tells the truth. He's like, hey, you know what? I'm not as poor as I let you believe. And I'm part of the Hunter Oil family. And so Donna is angry about the lies, but it doesn't take much. And he's like, what if we go get Indian food? And she's like, okay.
He has to explain what it is.
Yeah.
He says the dish is like, it's Indian food. And like, as soon as he said it, I'm like, that sounds good.
Yeah.
I guess
they would work on me.
They don't get Indian food much here in
I guess not.
Beverly Hills.
I guess not.
She's mad that he has money. I guess mad that he lied. That's just it,
mad
right?
That he lied.
That he's been doing this, like, shucks.
Yeah.
I had to patch my jeans again.
Well, I mean, from Donna's perspective, he's been staying on her parents' boat rent-free for, like, months because he's like, I'm poor. But
yeah,
it's also like he confessed that he's rich to the richest person in the cast. You know, like, it's just no big deal, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
She does say, like, you're buying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, because you're rich.
Yeah, so you're going to buy.
But it's just, now the two rich characters are rich together.
Perfect. So I'm so happy when that can work out. So another win for capitalism.
His end game doesn't make sense because he wants people to be friends with him, but they're going to have to find out sooner or later. So if he wants to be with Donna, then he should tell her and be like, hey, now I know you like me for me.
Yeah.
But like, that doesn't really, maybe that happens at the when they get into
Yeah, food. I guess we'll never know.
All on the table.
At the peach pit, we have a gnat sighting. He and the landlord are in there looking at the fire. She's going to evict. Yep. And that basically is like, oh, boy. And then it's like, that's a wrap on Joey Tetta. That's all we got.
Yeah, that landlady is like, you've been late on this. It's always something with you.
Yeah.
Get out. You go to hell. You're the one who goes to hell.
Yeah, it seems like they had a bitter love affair that ended poorly.
I'm sick of it. Get out.
Back at Casa Walsh, Val confronts Brandon about keeping Noah's secret, and he's like, whatever, Valerie, I don't care what you're saying. he goes in, Kelly's reading in bed, and is like, hey, I'm gonna go work at the clinic, and then she's like, hey, speaking of good decisions, what if we get Erica to come forward? And Erica overhears it, and she's like, what if I don't testify, but I re-enter the life of a teenage prostitute and confront a violent pimp by myself as a child? And they're like, this is an idea we can all get behind.
Yeah.
I think this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's better. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Steve...
It's much better to do it in an uncontrolled street rather than a controlled courtroom.
I agree.
You just want to have all the variables in place.
Yeah, what I don't want is to have her to get up there and say, yeah, all the stuff that everybody knows is true. I'm going to go to London now. Yeah. Bye. I don't want that.
Yep. You want her to be in a situation where she has to get pulled into an alley and maybe you see her and maybe you don't.
Right. That's the safe bet.
If something can happen in the blink of the eye, you should at least put yourself in that situation.
I think so. You got to feel, if you don't feel the danger, are you even doing the right thing? Brandon says no. Meanwhile, Steve comes to Carly's to tell her that, you know what? Gosh darn it. If that kid is his, he's going to step forward. He's going to be a father.
He's telling Carly that she's the one who needs to be hearing this right now. Like, she's the one crying herself to sleep at night. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And he's like, listen, I understand if you don't want to be a part of it, but you know what? She does.
Yeah. She has a kid.
She has a kid.
You're an idiot.
She already has a kid. There's a whole
thing. She's already been through this.
Their relationship is all about managing this kid, but okay. Zach comes out around this time. He needs his story finished. Steve's going to hang out and wait for it. And you know what? They're going to get the test results together because I don't want to overstate this, but Steve's kind of a hero, you know?
I like how he's dating this mom. And he's like, I'll just hang out in the living room while you read this story or something. There's no like, I don't need to know your kid though.
Right.
What is he like? 10, 12, 20? Who cares?
Yeah, he's like, on your way back from that story, if a sandwich were to be made, I wouldn't mind. Okay. At Donna's, she and Noah return. All the stuff going on, I do think that the two characters, the two actors, have a good chemistry, and I feel like their scenes together are pretty good.
Noah and Donna?
Yeah, did you...
Which benefits Donna, because she's not the best actress in the world.
For sure. Yeah, I'm glad
so
you
when
said
somebody's
it.
Somebody's able to work with that chemistry, it's pretty good.
Yeah, but I think they have a good thing, and they kiss, and they walk in, and David's standing right inside.
Even in the beginning scene with them on the boat where she dropped the camera because she's never seen one in her life, there's more heat in that scene than I feel like normally with her.
It's true. I know.
They're like face-to-face. She's like, so what happens next?
Yeah. It makes me kind of wonder.
Oh, she put film in the camera.
Yeah.
Because
we had one little scene a few episodes ago where Donna and Noah are like walking into somewhere together, but they really like Kelly and Noah have had a lot of stuff. Val and Noah obviously have had a lot of stuff, and Donna's kind of been on the outside of that. And it makes me wonder if just like hanging around behind the scenes, they were like, you know what? They've kind of got a good, let's try that because it seems to pop up, but it works. Anyway, she walks
just
in
playing Uno offset and people are like, wow.
Yeah.
Let's put that on screen.
Yeah. Get those cards. This scene, I feel like, is weird because David is just, like, waiting in the dark and Donna comes in.
It's so creepy. She turns on the light and there he is.
Yeah.
But, like a murderer.
Yes, but remember, Donna was attacked in that apartment by somebody lying in wait a couple seasons back. So it's like...
It's crazy.
David.
Steve and David are just like, this is their supervillain origin stories happening.
This is not good.
Like...
It's not
watch
good.
Watch the movie Manhunter, the original...
Science of the Lambs.
The prequel to Science... It's like the same vibe.
Yeah.
Michael Mann probably wanted to call up. He's like, hey, your David character stole my scene.
Brian Austin Green is... anywho, he's like, I wish I hadn't seen that. He just kind of makes her feel bad for moving on with her life after he stole money from her and lied to her consistently for months. Downtown, we see Erica... Back in her teen prostitute cosplay, approaches Riggs. She's wearing a wire. The cops are on the scene. Now Kelly's kind of not into this.
Yep.
And they kind of get enough. And Brandon's like, but, you know, we could let it go a little farther and see if we could get him on more. And they're all like on board for this. So it's like now they're totally
Brandon
fine.
Is really like Kelly's still worried, but he's like, he does this whole like explanation speech that does not.
Yeah.
Natural writing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I know.
But it's just like, yeah. The further she go, like, and then we'll have her drive away with him and we'll find the other prostitutes and then we'll have her go to this party and we'll figure out what celebrities are paying for it. No, she has to snort the coke.
Right.
Otherwise,
she's got to go the whole way. She has to live the life for the next 3 to 7 years and then we'll have him right where we want him. So he does eventually fall for the trap and he buys cocaine from an undercover cop. And I'm like, well, why did you need Erica for that? You know, yeah. Like if he's just going to buy cocaine or no, he sell cocaine to any random stranger, right. Just do that. Anyway, the cops all roll in and Erica gives the performance of her life, though, being like, Riggs, yeah. Don't leave me. She's pulled into another cop car because I guess the plan is for Riggs to think that they were both arrested because I guess this guy selling dope on the streets has this connection to a huge crime machine behind the scenes, but
got him.
Anywho, at Steve's doctor, we learned the test was negative. There's a 1 in 5 billion chance. Now he's going to go talk to Jody. He's like, I got a thing to say to her.
Yeah. For a second, when he says, I need to talk to Jody, I thought maybe what's going to happen is he's going to say, I'm not the dad, but I'm still going to help you out with something.
That's what I thought.
And I thought, all right, that's going to take all this crappiness he was at the beginning, the lesson learned he got from his dad, the relief, he's now going to step up and be like, listen, I'm still going to, I don't know about the other guy, I'm going to help you until things get worked out with him. Yep. That can't get out, I'm here for you.
I thought so too.
Not that he has to, not that the responsibility's on him now, but I thought that's where we were going.
I
so
did
that
too.
There would be some kind of redemption arc for the way he's been.
I did too. I know. I felt the same thing. Yep. Before we get back to Steve and Jody, we have a quick scene at the After Dark where Dave and Val are going through the debris and David kind of fills her in on everything. Mm-hmm. He says, Donna offered me a room and offered Noah everything else. Val tells David about Noah's dough and Noah's like, oh geez. So he's like, stealing my girlfriend and helping me? No!
Yep. He seems really upset that he paid off the...
I mean, that is a pretty bitter pill. That does make it worse. Yeah. I'll give him that. That's a much worse position to be in. So meanwhile, we're at Carly's and Jody comes about the tests and she admits like she did have a quick relationship before she met Steve and she apologizes. Mm-hmm. She was really hoping it would be Steve. She thought that it would be Steve.
Yeah, she said that. She said, between you and him, I was really hoping it was you.
Yeah.
Indicating this other guy is a loser jerk.
Yeah.
But I mean, after this, he has to be a little bit better than Steve.
I know. And she apologizes.
Anything,
and
it's just going to be a lateral move.
It's just kind of like, you put me through hell. And it's just like, I feel like I wish that, I don't know. I don't like any of it because I feel like they're so afraid to let the characters seem bad, you know, other than Valerie, to let the characters seem like they have these like bad instincts and stuff. The fact that we got to see him be like, I will step up and then not have to just feels kind of lame.
Yeah.
You know, but I think your point, if he found out that he didn't have to and then did it anyway, that's a better way to show that he learned something and he's good from it here. It's just like, woo, thank goodness, you know?
Yeah. Him walking in for that minute and saying, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it is his redemption.
Yeah.
And then he gets to basically be like the opposite of the Christmas Carol here.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, it is really disappointing because he just...
The only problem that kid is going to have is you as a mother, you tramp.
Yeah.
You ever darken my doorway again.
I mean, that's kind of how it feels. And it's just very frustrating.
You're not 5 months along with stupid?
I think the takeaway we're supposed to have is like, wow, when push came to shove, Steve was really going to do
Steve
the right thing.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? And instead, it's
and
like
now him and Carly are stronger than ever.
Instead, he tortured
when
this woman.
She hugs him?
Yeah.
Yeah. When Carly hugs him at the end, I expected the face of like, huh, this guy, huh?
Right.
Instead, it was like, my man.
Nobody.
No one's going to steal me from my man.
Nobody learned a lesson in this scenario. Nobody. And they're wearing matching gold sweaters, which I thought was weird, but...
Jody learned a lesson, and is that life is awful, and nothing's ever going to work out for her.
Exactly.
Things aren't in her future, I guess. Suck it, Jody. Yep.
I wrote, right here in the notes, I wrote the same thing.
90210.
I thought he was going to offer some level of support. Not like I'm going to raise this kid with you, but like, let me get you set up in a whatever, or let me...
Yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay, back at Casa Walsh, Kelly and Brandon get Erica set to fly off to live with Dylan. And Erica is like, no one's ever stood up for me like that before. And I'm like, Dylan went on like a transcontinental adventure and like spent half of his
Dylan
money.
Dylan didn't know you existed.
Right.
And then when he did know you existed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Valerie, no skin in the game. Valerie had no skin in the game at that point. And she went and put all herself in danger. Crazy.
I'm worried I'm mixing the two Valerie Bounty Hunter adventures.
Okay.
But isn't the Erica one where Dylan goes to rescue her, like, one where they, like, smash through a window or they, like, dive and there's a gun and everything?
Yes.
Isn't that... So nobody's...
I know.
So what's the nobody's ever stood up for me? The part where he put her name in a paper, now everybody knows her story?
Yeah.
Or the part where he put her back on the streets and put her in a situation that could go sideways?
It was a crazy thing to say. It was a crazy thing to say.
And now he's going to live with Dylan. Now she's going to go live with Dylan?
Now she's
going to
go live with Dylan. Yep.
So Dylan's been aware of all this and been like, hey,
well,
if you could fly her out my way, if you could buy her a ticket, I've got a spare room.
Yeah, I know. It makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense for how Dylan treated Erica in the past. It's nuts. I thought that line was like the standout crazy moment of this episode. Brandon says he might have gone to jail if he could arrange conjugal visits.
Is there any less attractive word than conjugal?
I don't think so.
It's just like he says it and I'm just like, ew.
Yeah, I don't.
Ew.
I don't think so.
Maybe that's why they called it that, to like discourage people from doing
it. Could be.
Oh, I want to do a conjugal.
Yes, I'd like to schedule a conjugal visit.
Okay.
If you're sure.
Yeah.
Finally, at the Peach Pit, David confronts Noah, and it turns out that Noah bought out the landlord, so David has all the time he needs. So David is just like, I hate you. And he just gives Noah the key, and he's like, okay.
It's so your
long.
Club now.
Yep. And
I think there's more to property and business ownership than just handing the keys to someone.
I think so.
I think a lot of paper has to be signed.
Yeah.
Other people probably have to be in the know.
No. You go in a courtroom and the judge says, I can solve this with one question. Who here has the key? Gentlemen, turn out your pockets.
Yep.
So, and Noah's like, see, I knew it. My money was going to ruin everything. And it's like, you're overstepping now. You know what I mean? Like, you keep... Yeah. You. Anyway, so Donna's left alone in the Peach Pit being like,
Nick,
no.
I want to pay for... I'm trying to think of something I would pay for you that would make you upset, but I feel like most of the time, anything somebody's like, hey, I'm going to pay this for you, I'd be like, cool.
Yeah.
I can't think of something.
Yeah.
What would you be really mad if I covered the cost of it? Hillary's, your wife's dental bills? I don't know.
Would you do that?
You'd be like,
would you do that? Because she might need a root canal again. And if you could do that.
Yeah, see, no, that would be nice.
Hmm.
So, David's just, he's just upset. I mean, I get the overstepping because he's not asking.
Yeah.
I guess that's it. But
I think it's
if Noah wanted to come in and be like, hey, man, don't worry about your car. I paid it off. He'd be like, oh, cool.
Great.
I like having rich
friends. Great. This is your money's fixing everything.
David has no money, right? That's what we're getting.
Well, that's confusing. That's a very confusing thing because last season he got a huge inheritance from his grandpa and then he bought part of the club and then he bought out Val. So I guess all the money
he's cash poor.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he's very cash poor.
He's cash poor.
That's
a good point. You're using the term. All right, Eric, what's your 90210 snap? What is the most dramatic moment from this?
This is hard. I feel like the part that I was just like, damn, was when David said, you go to hell. But I guess that's not like the oh snap moment.
Yeah.
I guess like the oh snap moment was when Jody was like acting.
Yeah.
For me at the end, when she comes out of the car, like, well, he's going away for good. Cause it was
Erica,
very like
Erica. Yeah. 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 help me. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. All right. I'm going to give it to the slaps. I feel like if there's a slap in an episode, I'm hard pressed to find a more dramatic moment. And Valerie really let him have it several times.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Verdict overall.
I mean, maybe the real oh snap is that last scene where he gives him the keys.
Yeah.
Because
that's true.
if he's as cash poor as he is because he bought the club and now he's like, now it's your club.
Yeah.
You don't even have to buy me.
Yeah.
It's your club.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a flex. That is a flex. Well, I mean, what's your verdict? Did you like it? Did you enjoy watching it? Where are you at?
It wasn't as hard to watch as I thought it was going to be.
Ouch. Okay.
Going in kind of blind because I'm behind on the podcast a bit because my drive is a little shorter now. I thought I'd be like lost and then not care, but I was ready to see how stuff resolved.
Okay.
So I was ready to see how the Steve thing resolved, and it was poorly.
Yeah.
But I was interested to see how it resolved. David stuff, all the Peach Pit After Dark stuff, I kind of check out, but like, I guess the Noah, he's rich, and now everybody's like, what?
Yeah.
What? I let him sleep on my futon. Yeah. You know, like that stuff was interesting. Yeah. And I did like that. I mean, obviously, like you said, it's the richest characters doing it, but I like that when Donna found out, she's like, all right, let's go to dinner.
Yeah. Yeah. You're buying. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I still, for the most part, I
character work. No.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Yeah. I'm finding myself this season more and more to be just so happy to be finishing things, you know? And so Right. Like, I'm so glad to be done with this horrible Erica plot and the horrible paternity plot and the horrible David Loan Shark plot that like, looking forward to, because I don't remember exactly how it goes with Noah like messing with the club and like Donna and Noah. Like, I'm not, my memories of this era are not as tight as the first, say, 5-6 years. So I ended this episode being like, okay, now we got all that stuff behind us. Let's move forward. So, yeah, I mean, I think I still had a good time with it, recognizing most of the plot points in the episode were annoying. Mm-hmm. That's where I land. All right. Well, normally you can catch me every other week on The Sindorian Life, but this time Kendra's on The Sindorian Life, and I'm on 90s Music Got Me Like. Eric's here. I assume you're going to be on X-Men again soon, because you guys have that chonky four-parter.
We got that four-part episode, Beyond Good and Evil, what was originally supposed to be the X-Men animated series finale.
Swan song.
But they got picked up for a couple more episodes that didn't go great. But yeah, it was a big... The X-Men's ending.
Did you watch 97 yet? Have you watched any of the episodes?
I haven't. I thought maybe after Beyond Good and Evil, but they're also releasing them episodically. So,
but doesn't it really pick up over the act, like the real finale of the...
The real finale, yes, where Magneto, where Xavier is dying and goes off to space.
Yeah, see, I have not seen that episode. So I was... Like, I was tempted to watch it, but I kind of want to wait till you and Hillary, like, finish the series and then just...
Yeah, yeah. It picks... it's still counting the episodes that came after as canonical, so that's not the issue there.
Okay. All right. Well...
Yep. And on 90s Music, the next song we're talking about is The Kids Aren't All Right by The Offspring.
Oh, yeah. I wanted it to be the Cheap Trick song, but that was, what, 70s, 80s?
Yeah, it probably would have.
Wouldn't work.
Sorry.
Wouldn't work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, was that your pick?
Yeah, it was my
pick. Are you being Offspring fan?
I wasn't growing up, and
something's happened. It's hitting you.
Some weird time it happened, and I started really getting into the Offspring and like listening to the albums, and really, and then we saw the Offspring live, and it was great. It was
right, you did. And that's hilarious.
It's nostalgic for me because I know it sounds like the time that it came out, and so it kind of sends me back to that time a little bit. Uh-huh. And then the music's fun and good. I don't know. It's weird. I don't know if I would have liked it as a kid, having listened to it. But at this point,
you're in.
Look at The Offspring.
Okay.
You listened to a lot of Offspring because they were on Crazy Taxi.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I'm going to know all the songs.
A lot of Offspring on Crazy
Taxi.
That's
great. Okay. Well, thanks for filling in for Kendra. Kendra will be back next time with season 8.
I didn't fill in. I kind of kicked her off.
That's true.
It wasn't that she was sick.
We tossed her off.
We booted her off.
What show do you want to be on next year?
Tomorrow's Promise to No Man, so I might have to take over hosting the show with Kendra when you get hit by a bus.
But then neither of you will be the expert.
Oh, that would be a really interesting show.
You know what? Maybe you reach out to Ian Ziering, see if he wants to you know, fill
in.
My
wife Hillary has seen the whole series.
She has. She could do it.
So, yeah, she'll take over.
She could do it. She's got a lot of stuff to say.
I'm pretty sure that's how the inheritance works.
Yeah, you're right.
Upon your death, your wife will then take over hosting duties. Yeah. Upon her death, your son. It's keeping in the family.
I think that's nice. I do feel optimistic, though, that Kendra and I will both return for season 8, episode 12, Friends Indeed.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what comes next? Or are you in real uncharted territory with your memory here?
I know. I warned her last time because there was an arc coming up that... I'll say this to you. I've been avoiding saying it to her. But I kind of, in my head, was like, I will never watch this again. Like, the arc that's coming up. I was like... Never again. If I watch the shows down the road, I'm not going to do it. And that's what we're about to go into. So maybe it's not as bad as I remember it, but I remember it being pretty rough. So we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. And on that friendly note, 902, and here we go.
Here we go.